Podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Sarah. Welcome, everyone.
And this week, we're really excited to have back Alex and Jackie from Happy Farm Bees to talk a little bit more about stress and burnout and moral injury. And if you didn't listen to the first episode, we highly recommend you go to the episode right before this and listen to kind of our setup conversation. So we're going to kind of pick back up there, and we're going to talk a little bit about burnout and moral injury. And as we're starting this episode, as we look more globally at the profession of pharmacy, how do we see burnout and moral injury affecting the profession of pharmacy right now, just kind of globally, not individual pharmacists, but all together?
Are you looking at me, Jackie? I'll go ahead.
Yeah. I think we could both have so much to say about this question. But thinking of the pharmacists that we talk to every day, there is a lot of burnout out in the healthcare workforce, not only in pharmacy, but across health professions. When we talk with folks who are feeling this way, they come home from work and they're exhausted. They couldn't give another ounce of their being to anything else thought-wise. Their family or relationships could be struggling as well. Mental, physical health is being challenged. It is a very sad situation that we hear from a lot of pharmacists who are facing these challenges. We'll talk about this later in this episode, and I think we touched on it earlier. There's a lot of systemic and organizational factors that play into that. I think a lot of wellness efforts so far have really focused on individual strategies for how you can prevent or combat burnout. Practice mindfulness, go to yoga, do this wellness challenge that we have for you. But what we're finding is that pharmacists don't always have time for that in their workday. The wellness programs that employers use they're not well utilized because they're not really setting up people to be successful in those programs. And so although organizations may be taking some strides to combat this issue, the strides that are being taken aren't working or aren't practical for what's going on. So we aim to help these pharmacists find meaningful and healthy work to be involved in. Because like Alex, I love this profession. And I think there's so much that pharmacists can do, but they have to be taken care of by their workplaces in order to care for other people.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The latest trend right now with organizations is well-being. It's the phrase of the day. And of course, we all want to be well. We want to be resilient. We want that. But the truth of the matter is it's a great way of reframing, who the problem is. You're the problem. You've got burnout. So you need to get better. When in fact, the literature is quite clear that the vast majority of causes of burnout are the environment. It is the environment that leads to burnout versus the individual. And from a statistics standpoint, as some pharmacists, we work with a lot of people in the community setting, but about half of the people we work with and then the other half are all over the place. And what the other institutional pharmacists, hospital, clinical, academia, pharma, you name it, they say, well, at least I'm not in retail, And the truth of the matter is hospital pharmacists, according to the burnout literature, are just as, if not more burned out than people in the community setting. And those numbers are anywhere from on the low end, 50% to on the highest I've ever seen, I believe was like 73% of people. And so how does that compare to the public? Well, general public, it varies, but I've seen anywhere from 30 to 40% of people are considered burned out in the workplace. So we're much higher.
And pharmacists are resilient people by nature. I mean, think about the training we've gone through.
Four years. Right? Oh.
Well, and on top of that, postgraduate training, other certifications. I mean, we're lifelong learners. We take on a lot. So likely we have coping strategies that we deploy in times of stress. But it's of interest that while these inherent traits are part of who we are, there's still a high number of pharmacists who are facing this. So to our discussion. You know, I think the organizational strategies are likely going to be more effective if we can figure out how to practically make them helpful for those they're trying to serve.
And I've been hearing just recently, maybe over the last 2 months, a lot of pushback on grit and resiliency and how it kind of, and I think you alluded to it, Alex, almost like a victim shaming way. And I've just started to hear a lot of pushback on that over the past 2 months. And I think it's starting to get more popular that those maybe aren't things that you should, I don't want to say those aren't things you should be proud of, but those shouldn't be things that you expect of yourself.
The problem with the idea of well-being a focus for organizations is it's a Band-Aid solution, and it's flipping the script. And organizations, big ones, do this all the time, right? The whole carbon footprint thing, that was made by gas companies. And the same thing is happening here. Oh, you're burned out? It's not us. No, our people are happy. They're engaged. We're making billions of dollars. It's you. You're the one that has the problem. And so you need to work on yourself. And here, well, let's sign you up for some mandatory, you know, well-being seminars and training so that you can perform better. But the truth is that, and the literature backs this up, that mandatory well-being does more harm than good. Mandatory forcing people to sit down and reflect on their life as to why they're not being a productive citizen in society makes them feel worse. It makes them not perform better. And so it's just another example of corporate reframing and putting the blame on the individual versus the environment. It's very frustrating. I'm very mad about it.
So you've certainly convinced us that this is a systemic issue, especially with those statistics that you shared. So to start talking about solutions and to help our listeners set some realistic expectations, what are some things that they cannot control when it comes to this topic?
Oh, boy. It's kind of like asking the question, don't think about a pink elephant.
Well, we learned in our last episode to start with no and be convinced to yes.
I'll take the perspective of someone who's on the front lines. Meaning you're not a manager. You may feel trapped in that position. You may feel like there's just absolutely nothing that you can do to change your immediate work environment, even if it's something as small as it's a small pharmacy and there's a pharmacist and one technician, or maybe not even a technician. You can control everything that comes out of you. You cannot control what comes in. And sometimes that means negative patient interactions, a boss yelling at you, a doctor saying a very unkind word that just peeves off and ruins your entire day. But you can control how you feel about these things. And a lot of this sounds like positive psychology because it is. I encourage people on the front lines to think about what are the very small things that you can do to influence those small reactions, right? These are really soft skills developments issues.
So as we think about, too, is like pharmacists as managers, and even in a little pharmacy and things like that, where it's maybe, as you said, you and a technician or something, sometimes you feel your burnout may come from the way that your technician is being treated or things like that. Is that something you can really control? Like, I don't want to say how your technician is being treated, but the feelings of the people around you, too, can lead to your burnout. Is that something that is realistic to control?
In that situation, I think it comes down to a conversation. And what the conversation has to be about is expectations. I learned early on in my marriage that every fight with my wife was about an unmet expectation. I expected you to clean up this. I expected you to do this. I expected this to happen. We didn't use those words, but it made me realize, if I don't communicate what I think or expect from someone, then why should I expect them to read my mind? And, you know, as a leader of my own organization, I've been at fault for this myself, where I don't know all of the issues that are going on with the people that work with me. And I have missed things before. I have seen people get stressed out about situations. And I wouldn't say burnout, but they're not happy. about something that's going on. And I can't read their minds. I don't know what's going on. I'm an optimist, so I like to assume everyone is happy. That's not true, because we live in an imperfect world. And I think even when it came down to my interactions with patients that, you know, would call me names or say things like, you're not a doctor, you know, and, you know, they take that knife and they love twisting it. And it comes down to setting those ground rules. This is something we do as coaches with people when we work with them, and we say, here are the rules of this agreement between you and I, so that it doesn't go unspoken, and so that expectations are set from the very beginning. Here's how I'm going to interact with you. Here is the ideal outcome from my point of view, and here's what I hope we can come to an agreement about. Because often when you bring forth these issues, whether like a technician's being treated poorly, and it happening, you see it happening all the time, managers are way more on the defense than they are on the offense. And who can blame them, right? That's how the workplace was. That's the way it is. And if you're playing with someone in a conversation and they're on the defense, you have to get them on your side. You have to let them see you want the same things they do. You want people to be engaged. You want patients to be safe. You want the workplace to be engaging, fun, and invigorating. You want to be absorbed. But when these sorts of things happen, they halt that. If you help them see from your point of view what's going on while including them in the conversation, these HR meetings, these manager meetings, they go a lot easier for people. But a lot of people don't even feel like that's even worth a try. Some people just throw up their hands and say, no way, my manager doesn't get me. She says this, she did this, so on and so forth. And then it's a lose-lose situation from the start. So it's very hard to overcome this problem in a toxic work environment.
Yeah, I think to build on that, the concept of psychological safety at work and, you know, having trusting relationships to build on. I know our students read 5 Dysfunctions of a Team and take that a little assessment just to learn about how good teams function and how dysfunction, you know, can happen if that foundational trust and relationships and openness, vulnerability, if that stuff doesn't exist, then your team will never get to higher levels of productivity. I think one other thing that managers and frontline individuals can think about is demonstrating appreciation for each other for small things that are going on throughout the workday. I know for me, I actually have a reminder on my calendar to appreciate my team members on a regular basis so that it's on top of mind for me, because we're all busy individuals throughout, you know, our workplaces. But if we can demonstrate that we appreciate each other, then I think that makes the world of difference. So that is within our control, and it's, you know, it's not something that people can take away from us. So demonstrating appreciation for those you're working with, I think will go a long way.
At a training too, they said to ask them too, like, how would they prefer to be recognized for something as well? So just assume that the thing that will make you feel good is going to be what they want as well. And so doing a little bit of legwork into that too, to find out what is meaningful to them.
Yeah, there's a great book on that, the 5 Languages of Appreciation. It's like the love language book, but for the workplace. We actually use it at the Happy 5D, which has been really eye-opening, I think, and helpful as we appreciate each other in different ways, whether that's words of affirmation or practical, what's the one where you give gifts or something like that, and then there's acts of service. And it's interesting. My love language and my work language are totally different, which I found kind of fascinating. But I don't know if you all have taken it yet. I know we have done it with Happy 5D.
I have not read that, so I'll have to take a look, because that would be very interesting. Well, I want to thank you both for being here today to talk a little bit more about this topic. We do have one more, so I would encourage everybody to come back again in 2 weeks. And we're going to be doing almost an entire episode on solutions. So we frame the problem. We have some things that we frame that we really can't help with and we can't fix on our own, but some strategies. But we're going to really dive into those strategies next. So we'll see you all again. Thank you for listening.